This chapter is called More About Alcoholism. It could be called More Truth About Alcoholism. Heard all my life, you know the truth will set you free. If I'm not free, it's because I don't know the truth. And I always do better when I know better. And that's what I learned from this chapter, More About Alcoholism. See, most of us have been unwilling to admit that we're real alcoholics. No person likes to think that he's bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it's not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove that we can drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we're like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed.
Now here you got to be careful. You see Bill doing his favorite thing again. He's repeating himself over and over, but he uses a different word each time he does. In the two paragraphs that Joe just read, we see four words that all mean exactly the same thing. He said the idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. Now, we know an obsession is an idea that overcomes all ideas to the contrary, strong enough to make you believe a lie. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. We know what an illusionist is. An illusionist is a magician. They can stand in front of you and with sleight of hand and a few props make you believe something that isn't true. So illusion means to believe something that isn't true or a lie. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity. Insanity is to believe something that is not true. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost self that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people or present and maybe has to be smashed. If you've deluded yourself, that means you've come to believe something that isn't true. So you may see four words. It may be obsession. You may see the word insanity. You may see the word illusion. Or you may see the word delusion. All four mean exactly the same thing. To believe something that is not true or to believe a lie. Now let's go see the obsession, the illusion, the delusion, the insanity that we alcoholics have just before we take the first drink. Let's go to page 32, second paragraph.
He said a man of 30 was doing a great deal of spree drinking. He was very nervous in the mornings after these bouts and quieted himself with more liquor. Now he was ambitious to succeed in business and saw that he'd be getting nowhere if he drank at all. Once he started, he had no control whatever. Now, he made up his mind that until he had been successful in business and had retired, he would not touch another drop. An exceptional man. He remained bone dry for 25 years and retired at the age of 55 after a successful, happy business career. Then he fell victim to a belief, which practically every alcoholic has, that his long period of sobriety and self-discipline had qualified him to drink as other men. Out came his carpet slippers and a bottle. In 2 months, he was in a hospital, puzzled and humiliated. Now, he tried to regulate his drinking for a while, making several trips to the hospital meantime. Then, gathering all his forces, he attempted to stop altogether and found that he could not. Every means of solving his problem was money he could buy was at his disposal. Every attempt failed. Though a robust man at retirement, he went to pieces quickly and was dead within 4 years. This case contains a powerful lesson. Most of us have believed that if we were to remain sober for a long stretch, we could thereafter drink normally. But here's a man who at 55 years found he was just where he left off at 30. We've seen the truth demonstrated again and again. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Commencing to drink after a period of sobriety, we're in a short time as bad as ever. Now, if we're planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservation of any kind, nor any lurking notion that someday we'll be immune to alcohol.
We know the truth to be this. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. We've never seen one single case where one of us could go back and learn how to drink successfully. Now, to believe anything different than that is to believe something that's untrue or to believe a lie. Now, this man of 30, was his real problem the fact that he has a physical allergy to alcohol? Or that he has a form of insanity that tells him it's okay to drink alcohol after 25 years of sobriety? The real problem centers in the mind, telling us we can drink, rather than the body that ensures we can't drink. That's one example. Let's go over to page 34. Second paragraph. For those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. We are assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he's already lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not. Many of us felt we had plenty of character. There was a tremendous urge to cease forever, yet we found it impossible. This is the baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it, this utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. How then shall we help our readers determine to their own satisfaction whether they are one of us? The experiment of quitting for a period of time will be helpful, but we think we can render an even greater service to alcoholic sufferers and perhaps to the medical fraternity. So we shall describe some of the mental states that precede a relapse into drinking. For obviously, this is the crux of the problem. Now remember, always, just before we relapse into drinking, there's no alcohol in the mind. Stone, cold, sober. What sort of thinking dominates an alcoholic who repeats time after time the desperate experiment of the first drink? Friends who have reasoned with him after a spree, which brought him to the point of divorce or bankruptcy, are mystified when he walks directly into a saloon. Why does he? Of what is he thinking? Our first example is a friend we shall call Jim. Joe loves Jim.
Oh, I love Jim.
He gets a little screwed up with him once in a while. Let's see what he can do with him today.
Everybody likes old Jim. Our first example is a friend we shall call Jim. This man has a charming wife and family. He inherited a lucrative automobile agency. He had a commendable World War record. He's a good salesman. Everybody likes him.
Typical alcoholic, isn't he?
Right.
Everybody likes old Jim.
And he's an intelligent man and normal so far as we can see. Oh, except for a nervous disposition. He did no drinking until he was 35. In a few years, he became so violent when intoxicated that they had to be committed. On leaving the treatment center, on leaving the asylum, well, same thing, he came into contact with us. Now, we told him what we knew of alcoholism.
They told him about step one.
And the answer we had found.
They told him about step two.
And he made a beginning.
He made a beginning. We're going to find out a little later on that step three is but a beginning. So apparently Jim took steps one, two, and three. Immediately, things began to get better for him.
Lots of good things happened. His family was reassembled. He began to work as a salesman for a business he'd lost through drinking. And all went well for a time, but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life.
We're going to find out a little later on. The only way we can enlarge on step three is through 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11. Jim didn't do any of those. 1, 2, 3. That's all he did.
Kind of like a ball game. 1, 2, 3, and you're out. Now, to his consternation, he found himself drunk a half a dozen times in rapid succession. On each of these occasions, we worked with him, reviewing carefully what had happened.
Now, these are good AA members. Jim got drunk 6 times in a row, and each time they went over there, carefully working with him, reviewing what had happened to him. You get drunk 6 times in a row today, they're probably not going to have anything to do with you. But these were good AA members, really working with Jim and working hard.
So he agreed he was a real alcoholic and in serious condition. He knew he'd face another trip to the treatment center if he kept on. Moreover, he would lose his family for whom he had deep affection. Yet he got drunk again. And we asked him to tell us exactly how it happened.
I'm getting a little tired of Jim now. They said, my God, Jim, this is 7 times in a row. Let's don't go through this anymore. Sit down here and tell us just exactly how this happened this time.
So we're going to look into the mind of Jim now, and we're going to see what he was saying, and they're going to see where he went insane. This is his story. I came to work on Tuesday morning.
We read this book for years before we saw that. I came to work on Tuesday morning. Where was he all day Monday?
Bad about Monday, yeah. But he came to work on Tuesday morning.
And we're going to look in Jim's mind now and where he went from normal to abnormal or from sane to insane thinking.
He said, I remember I felt irritated. I had to be a salesman for a concern I once owned.
I don't think that's insanity. Probably everybody in this room that had to be a salesman for a concern they once owned would probably be a little bit irritated by that fact. I think that's normal thinking.
He said, I had a few words with the boss, but nothing serious.
The boss probably said, say, Jim, by the way, where were you all day yesterday anyhow? Nothing real bad, just enough to irritate him.
He got a little restless and a little irritated, didn't he? He said, then I decided to drive into the country and see one of my prospects for a car.
So apparently this guy is a car salesman. He wants to get away from the shop a while. He's a little bit irritated with the boss. We're going to drive out in the country, see somebody we already know to try to sell a car to him. Normal, same thinking for an alcoholic car salesman.
Mm-hmm. Said, on the way, I felt hungry, so I stopped at a roadside place where they have a bar. I had no intention of drinking. I just thought I'd get a sandwich.
What's more normal than if you're hungry, you want to stop in somewhere and get something to eat? The fact that they got a bar in this place is beside the point. We have no intention of drinking. We're hungry. We're all going to get something to eat. Normal, sane thinking for an alcoholic car salesman.
He said, I also had the notion that I might find a customer for a car at this place, which was familiar. Well, I've been going to it for years. I'd eaten there many times during the months I was sober.
So this is nothing new. We've been in this place many times before. We're going to go in there and get a sandwich, and we might sell a car while we're in there. Normal, sane thinking for an alcoholic car salesman.
He said, I sat down at a table and ordered a sandwich and a glass of milk.
What's more normal than if you're hungry to sit down at a table and order a sandwich and a glass of milk?
Still no
normal, sane thinking.
Still no thought of drinking. I ordered another sandwich and decided to have another glass of milk.
Now, if you're hungry enough, there's nothing wrong with two sandwiches and two glasses of milk. Unless you're a member of Overeaters Anonymous, you better look at it pretty close. But for an alcoholic car salesman, normal, sane thinking, two sandwiches, two glasses of milk.
Now the italic.
Now comes the squiggly writing.
Right. He said, suddenly. That means right now. Suddenly, the thought crossed my mind that if I would put an ounce of whiskey in my milk, it couldn't hurt me on a full stomach.
Now that's absolute insanity. For him to believe he can take whiskey, mix it with milk, and it won't hurt him on a full stomach. Now, based on the insane idea, he makes a decision and takes an action.
He said, I ordered whiskey and poured it into the milk. And I vaguely sensed I was not being any too smart. I felt reassured as I was taking the whiskey on a full stomach.
Now we've got it in ourselves. The phenomenon of craving develops. We can't stop now.
The experiment went so well that I ordered another whiskey and poured it into more milk. That didn't seem to bother me, so I tried another. And every time he did that, he was ruining two drinks. Ruining the whiskey and ruining the milk, putting them together. Thus started one more journey to the treatment center for Jim. It was a threat of commitments, the loss of family and possession, to say nothing of that intense mental and physical suffering which drinking always caused him. Now, he had much knowledge about himself as an alcoholic, yet all reasons for not drinking were easily pushed aside in the favor of the foolish idea that he could take whiskey if only he mixed it with milk. Now, whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. How can such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? And if you're looking for a definition of insanity, there it is. The lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else.
Is Jim's real problem the fact that he has a physical allergy to alcohol? That he has a form of insanity?